You're listening to the Creative Processes interview with Doug Woodham, former president of the Americas for Christie's Auction House and author of Jean-Michel Basquiat, The Making of an Icon. This podcast is supported by the Jan Michalski Foundation. What do you feel are those key ingredients that turn an artist into a global brand?
They have to have created something that's new, fresh, and distinctive for their day. So all of the great artists are there for a reason, and they're there for a reason because they rebelled in some way. They created a visual vocabulary that felt fresh and new, that excited people. So the great artists are not built on sort of anthills of sand. They're built on things of substance and of meaning, though is not a sufficient condition to become an icon. It's a necessary but not sufficient condition to become one of the greats that's accepted. I think you have to have a interesting and vivid personality or personal narrative that makes you interesting for people to talk about and want to learn about. I think you also have to have a support network of galleries, of curators, collectors who are excited about your work and want to push it forward and don't want it to be forgotten. And so I think those are factors. I think it's also, if you can always remain part of the sort of relevant zeitgeist, that's also important. And Basquiat has benefited enormously from the pivot in the art world that started in the 1990s to identity being such an important part of what, at least in the contemporary art world, came to view as, you know, incredibly important and relevant for some artists to be considered important. So again, I think Basquiat's visual vocabulary distinctive stands out relative to what was being done in the 1980s. And so that's the sort of strong hill on which his reputation is built. I think there are just so many interesting stories, and he's such an interesting personality that helped propel him. There were, you know, collectors and curators who gravitated around him and who wanted to be part of that story and push him. And then the zeitgeist really pushed and promoted him. And it ended up making him be the Black artist that curators and collectors wanted to be talking about. There are so many great Black artists who were active in the 70s and 80s, many of whom today have been found and pushed into the forefront, and you find them in museums, you find them in auction houses. But, you know, Basquiat benefited from being the first Black artist of note that got pushed forward. And as in many things, the first benefits, if you're the fifth, sixth, or seventh, you still benefit, but he's benefited from being the first. And so there's something very pragmatic. It's the economist in me that thinks about these things. So people today are so used to Basquiat's prices being extraordinarily high and rising that it's almost hard for people to understand that wasn't the case. In the year he died, 1988, you know, a terrific painting by Basquiat might have sold for $30,000. He might have been somewhat well known within the contemporary art world, but relative to his other artistic peers, like a great Julian Schnabel painting cost $800,000. A great painting by other sort of neo-expressionists were $250,000. Basquiat's was $30,000. I guess second is, after he died, some speculative capital entered his market and his prices did pop. But in the early 1990s, his prices fell apart. And for much of the first half of the 1990s, his work was selling for 80% off what it had been selling before. Auction houses didn't want to include him in their auctions. Galleries weren't showing his work. So in the early 1990s, he was more of the forgotten man. The art world is a place where once your prices fall, it's hard to reignite interest. For Basquiat in particular, there was a taint around him in the early 1990s because a lot of collectors felt that he gained fame because of his association and relationship with Warhol and the fact that he died young. There really wasn't an intellectual framework to situate Basquiat in the sort of history of art. And so there was a really good chance he was going to be remembered, but certainly not become a great star. And so there were some three key figures who believed in him, thought that there was a market opportunity associated with him, and proceeded to buy almost every available Basquiat in the first half of the 1990s that became available. And so they were collectors, they were speculators, they were investors, they were also just passionate believers in his work. And but for those three people, you know, it would have taken decades before Basquiat would have achieved acclaim, if ever. Love the way that you think about it and talk about it. Yeah, because the fact that he was intellectually gifted, that came about because I interviewed his uncle, with whom he lived for the first 5 years of his life in a multi-generational household in Brooklyn. And when I talked with his uncle and also Jean-Michel's cousin, who was the son of that uncle, they talked about how he was reading New York Times articles when he was in first grade. And I remember stopping them. I said, say that again? Because I hadn't heard that ever before. And they just talked about how intelligent and wickedly smart he was. So that led me to go down the path of reading all the research on gifted children. And there's just a huge body of work. And so I tracked down two leading academics who helped me understand how to distill that body of research down to what was relevant for somebody like Jean-Michel. From all that research, what I learned is that gifted children, and we're talking 1% gifted, have this remarkable ability to absorb information and find patterns in them that others don't see. They pursue interests passionately and go down rabbit holes really quickly. They retain that information for long periods of time and are able to just sort of see the world through a sort of mature lens at an early age that for many gifted children is somewhat terrifying when they're young because they're seeing things that are beyond their sort of emotional comprehension, but they're trying to figure out what's going on. So Jean-Michel exhibited all these characteristics from the people I interviewed, and it became a huge door opener for me to understand his work because, you know, for 40 years, I've seen most of his paintings. And so it was just that visual cacophony. There had to be something deeper than him just having visual acuity. The drug taking, a really important point. I mean, there's a long passage in the book about the impact of his drug addictions on his art and his productivity. And so many creatives throughout history have relied on heroin and drugs, and it's not a new thing. I was really interested in trying to understand what about his heroin use? What did that contribute to his productivity, to his mindset, to his attitudes? And it's interesting, if you read the literature on heroin addictions, you can't find anything in there that suggests anything positive about heroin. And that's for reasons, because it's addictive, it's horrible. It's like, it's not a good path to go down. And so all the literature is about, it's awful, it's evil, it's terrible. You know, jazz musicians, some of the literature on jazz will talk about it, freeing. But I finally found somebody who knew Basquiat very well, who met him when he was young, who didn't have a heroin addiction per se, but he knew William Burroughs, and he talked about the impact of heroin on creatives. And it was a door-opening interview because he talked about how with relatively small doses of heroin, it pulls the worry cord out of the socket for artists. You know, artists are walking on a tightrope or trying to figure out what to create, how to create things of note. And he said heroin is actually an elixir in the early stages. And he talked about there's almost a 3-year heroin honeymoon where when you're using it, you can work for extended periods of time. Your worry cord has been pulled from the socket. And life is great. Life is exalted. Life is wonderful. Much of the great work that Basquiat created 82, 83 was when he was using heroin. And so this interview helped understand the positive impacts that heroin had on unleashing his creativity. But it, of course, came to bite him in the ass, and his addictions surged at some point. And actually, a lot of the work that he made in the last couple of years of his life are sort of vague echoes of what he was doing in his great years, in part because he becomes so listless on heroin and was just sort of banging out work for exhibitions. I am so with you. I'm a 10,000 hours guy. Being creative, it is such hard work. You have so many false starts. You've got to learn. You got to try. And so, look, there's a lot of creative slop out there. I think people are maybe thinking, well, all these generative AI tools are going to enable me to become an esteemed creative faster without having to do the 10,000 hours. I guess have a greater sense of optimism. By most objective standards of infant mortality rates, food security, longevity, this is actually one of the greatest times in history to be alive. And I think Homo sapiens have a long track record of solving problems and making things better. And so I think having a greater sense of optimism about the future, because while there are lots of intractable problems, with time, solutions do emerge. Again, that's just the history of humanity. And, you know, if you compare today to the dark ages of 1944 and World War II, like, this is a pleasure palace. And so I think having a greater sense of optimism about people being able to do things and create things, I think more of that is needed, because on both left and right, everybody wants to scream and be upset. But I think a greater sense of optimism is needed. How does this really compare with previous moments in time? And oh, maybe, look, things are troubled and things are difficult and there are horrible things that are going on, but maybe it's not as bad as I thought if I just have a slightly longer time period with which I form my opinion.
We hope you've enjoyed listening to these highlights. To listen to the latest episodes or learn more about participating in exhibitions or interviews, click on subscribe. Thank you for listening.